Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today, my guest is Miss Jess Hymas Gant. Well, good
Hi.
morning or afternoon for you.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
I am great. So Jess is all the way from Wales.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, but just so people can know you, I'm going to read your bio. So Jess lives in Wales. Her parents were missionaries working as Bible smugglers in communist Europe in the 70s and 80s. She was born in Austria. She had a very nomadic upbringing, traveling all over the world. Jess got her degree in Spanish, history, and German and began working for a time in Spain, Germany, and Mexico before returning to Wales. She met her husband in 1998 and they married in 2003. They just celebrated 20 years of marriage and have 9 children between them. Jess has worked as a manager for a national social justice charity for the past 24 years. She and her husband set up a funeral business 15 years ago that her husband continues to run. Her book, Moments in Mummydom, was published in September. So happy to have you on and to hear about your adventures. So just tell us about you.
Thank you. Well, I was a missionary kid. I was born in Vienna, and my parents were working in Eastern Europe. My parents are from the UK, so we came back here after a series of different things happening where both of them almost died at different points. So that kind of naturally brought us back here. And then I guess we were around here really during schooling years. We would travel a lot when we were sort of primary school age, which I'm not sure what that is in the States, but yeah, before we got into high school. And so pretty much every holiday was, I say holiday in inverted commas, because it wasn't really a holiday. It was just, we were away. Or my parents would go out and teach teams that were out in the field, were on different missions trips. And then we spent time living on a ship around Africa and India. Everyone at school thought we were on a cruise. We weren't, we were on a ship. It definitely wasn't a cruise. And we had to do school and everything. And then, yeah, so I guess it's in my blood to travel and to, the nations are in my heart, should we say. So yeah, so I went on to university and I studied languages, which was kind of natural for me to do. And then as part of that, I lived for a time in Spain. And then after my degree, I spent some time in actually I spent time in Germany as well during my university years. And then I ended up in Mexico because I wanted to get into social justice kind of work. So I was there doing social justice work with a Mexican organization for a time, but things went a bit awry and I ended up back in North Wales very unexpectedly and was not planning on staying here at all. But God had different plans, and I think it was the only time I've audibly heard him tell me to do anything, and that was to stay in Rhyl, which is where I live. And I think he knew that he had to audibly tell me to do it because I wouldn't have done it otherwise. And I remembered saying to him, "Lord, how am I ever going to get a career in Rhyl? Because it's kind of not got a great name. There are a lot of social problems here, a lot of drugs, and we live in one of the poorest areas of the UK. And so he and I said, and also because I was single at the time, I said, also, how am I going to meet anybody in real, and he just said, watch me. And so I said, okay. And then the very next day, the way that it unfolded was that I happened to, how I as a Christian, I spend time with the Lord each day and just have time, reading the Bible and praying. And it just dropped into my head about this night shelter that was for homeless people. And I thought, oh, I remember seeing that when I was at university. I wonder whether that's still going. And I thought I should ask this guy. And there was this guy that was in my church. I thought he would probably know because he was into a lot of community stuff. And blow me, that day I was working, because I was trained as an English language teacher, and I was working at a language school, and I went to the language school. We had a kind of time, we would have a time each day of devotions, just time to get everyone to just think on maybe a word from the Bible. And they'd invited this very guy that I needed to talk to do the devotions that morning. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I was going to phone you. And said, do you know anything about the night shelter? And he said, you know what? Funny you should ask. I'm on the steering committee. They've just advertised some jobs. Do you want me to get you your application forms? And I was like, yeah, that would be great. So he got me these application forms. I applied for different jobs there. And got a job. It was a temporary 4-month contract. I decided based on that to take out a 6-month lease on a flat, which was like, I didn't tell my landlord that I didn't know how I was going to pay the rent after 4 months, but you know, and I've stayed with that organization now for 24, almost 25 years, and moved around within it, but very much I think the Lord, he knows what's good for us, doesn't he, in terms of, because I'm quite a short-term projects type person. I like to set things up. I'm good at bringing kind of chaos out of order out of chaos, although sometimes it is the other way around. and that's kind of what I do in my job, really. So I've carried on in this work, but when I felt the word, you know, when God called me to Wales, he said, I want you to be here because I'm going to do something here and I want you to be here for it. And I've come back to that each time because I don't feel that that has happened yet. I don't think I've been treading water. I think, you know, what I've been doing has been very much in that, you know, going towards whatever it is that the Lord's going to be doing here. But I still don't feel like that's happened. So over the last few years, as well as having a family, so I married, I met my husband within 3 months of being called here, and we didn't get together then, but you know, who knew then, we worked together in there. I never, if you'd have told me that we'd be married 20 years now, I never would have believed it then, but yeah. And so between us, we have 9 kids. So I'm a stepmom to 4 boys, and then we have another 5 together. And so as well as doing that, I just, you know, when I think you have kind of different seasons where you kind of follow leanings in your heart, if you listen, you know, and just, I had had, when I was in my 20s, we used to have a kind of Bible study group that would run for young adults in my apartment. And one of the times that we had a time of prayer, and there was a couple that were visiting from the States, and they just prayed for me. And the guy just said, I really feel like the Lord is saying that you have a creativity in you that will surprise even you. And I said, oh, you know, and I think we all have a creativity in us, because we're, you know, we're created in God's image, and he is creative, isn't he? So, but I kept asking the Lord, that's interesting. What is that? Then a few years later, I was at a conference at my brother's church in a different part of the UK, and there was a visiting Canadian preacher, and he just asked, you know, whether anyone wanted to go forward for prayer. I went forward for prayer, and he prayed, and he said, I feel like the Lord's saying there's a creativity in you that will surprise even you. It was word for word the same prophecy that I'd been given, you know, a few years back by somebody else. And he said, and it'll come through your fingers. And I thought, oh, that's it. So I kept coming back to that and saying, Lord, what is it? You know, what's this creativity? And actually, it did surprise me, because so lockdown surprised everyone, but even more so me, because I was pregnant and I was expecting a baby in January 2020. And I had this grand plan that I was going to be at home with, you know, enjoying maternity leave. It was my 5th and final child, and everyone else would be at school. So I'd have this, you know, dedicated time. I'd be able to get, because, you know, I actually might know what I was doing this time, whereas with your first, you don't, you're just winging it. And And then blow me, 6 weeks in, and I was homeschooling four children whilst having no sleep, whilst trying to homeschool in Welsh because my kids are bilingual. And on very little sleep with my husband out of work because he and it was not how I planned to do maternity leave at all. And and I was off for a year, and pretty much the entire time I was off was the entire time that the kids were at home. And and I had just, and the day I went back to work was the day they went back to school. And but I was feeling rather cheated, should I say, of time. You know, I didn't get a lot of headspace. And it's funny because during, I just was coming towards the end of it, I really felt like it was a pivotal time for me to maybe relook at what I was doing in life. And I spotted a course that was just popped up on Facebook feed, you know, that was about doing art thing. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And it was like, I think the reason I liked it was because it was a bit of art, which I'd never done real art, any art or painting or anything. And the lady that was running the course was doing a kind of devotional, which, and it was only $10. So I signed up for this $10 course. And it really, turns out I could paint, which I didn't realize I could. And that kickstarted something in me that was the kind of creativity that had been there, which I think really led on to me then kickstarting the writing thing. I had always written, because of us traveling, a lot of the time we would be set homework of, you know, write your journal while you're away, of the time that you're away. And so I have journals going back, you know, when I was eight in India, and written in from a child's point of view. It's really interesting. Well, to me, I don't know about anyone else, but for me, it's interesting. And so I kind of always, as a way of processing things, I'd written stuff down. And I then when I started to have kids, I started to write stuff down. And it was the start of social media. And I would just put stuff down in the middle of the night, you know, just a kind of summary of what was going on that day, as a kind of, is there anyone else out there? Because actually, sometimes in the dead of night, when you, especially in the early days of having kids, you know, it can be quite lonely, actually. You know, you can feel like you're bombarded with lots of advice from different people about, you know, do you trust the professionals, or do you trust your judgment, or do you trust your parents, or who do you go with? You know, how do you do this? And so I guess it was partly just kind of as a way of reflecting, you know, is there anyone else out here that's not getting it right? You know, and actually when I started to write, then different people would get in touch and say, oh, do you know what, Jess, you should really write a blog. This is, or you should write a book. This is really funny. And I was thinking, is it? It's just my life. You know, it's not necessarily funny. Well, I guess it is. I think you have to have humor because you'd cry otherwise. And so that was where the idea got planted about writing a book. And yeah, and blow me, it happened. So I'll go on more about my book. So that's a bit of an introduction, a long introduction.
Wonderful, now we got your story. So let's just start at the beginning. So, you know, so many people, they think they're going to live their lives, they're going to go to work. And when they get to be 60 or whatever, 65, and they retire, then they get to travel the world. And so it's something that people look forward to their whole life to be able to do that. But that was your life growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, gave you a really different perspective.
Yeah, it did. I think it's really made me value culture, different people from different cultures. It opens your eyes to the way different people think, to just language, just the vibrancy that's out there in different nationalities, and just so many precious people, you know, who do things differently to me, but just in their own way. I love it. Me and my husband are quite different. So I thrive. If you threw me into a country and I didn't know the language and I didn't know where I was, I'd work it out. You know, I thrive off that, you know, just being in that kind of thing. Whereas he doesn't. So yeah. But yeah, so I think it definitely did that. And also, I guess, gave me an ability to really get on with a lot of different people from different backgrounds, which actually in my work that comes in handy. So I work for a social justice charity. I manage services across four of the local authorities in North Wales. We do a mix of work. So we have projects with people who have substance misuse issues, a lot of mental health issues. So there are a lot of complex needs that are that people are presenting with. And also we specifically have projects that help homeless people find accommodation. And homeless has changed in terms of who that is in North Wales, just with COVID and stuff, the picture has changed. So it's not your kind of traditional idea of a street homeless rough sleeper, you know, but now we've got people approaching us who are in their 70s, 80s, who've been living in accommodation for 20 years, and then they've been given notice by the landlords because there's a change in the housing law in Wales. And so, yeah, so it's definitely helped. My background has helped me work out how to kind of interact with different people from different places. And that's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, and this is just a passion of mine, is, you know, having affordable housing for everyone. You know, some people, they, you know, come into this world and they have their career and they make plenty of money and they're fine. But there's, with all the changes happening, like you said, there's people that all of a sudden they find themselves in this position. So what are some of the things that they're doing in Wales, maybe that help find housing for these people?
It's quite a bleak picture at the moment, I should say. I can only talk from a Welsh point of view, but there's kind of a melting pot of what's gone on, really, in terms of, I think, COVID really. So when COVID happened and lockdown happened, the UK government said there should be no one sleeping out on the streets. So local authorities were instructed to put people into accommodation. So a lot of people used B&B accommodation. And in North Wales, we have our main industry, if you like, is tourism. So we have a lot of hotels and bed and breakfasts and stuff. So a lot of people got put into temporary accommodation who are still there. And that's the problem. That is the problem. And then also, I think lockdown meant that it changed people's thinking, didn't it? Because whereas before so many people were in offices, now, you know, we got a lot of people that were like, whoa, hang on a minute, I don't need to live in a city. I could live in North Wales, which is beautiful, where you get a lot of, you know, a lot of house for your money, and in a rural area. And then I could just do online work and go to the office one day a week in the city. And so we found that the housing market went up, where, you know, it took off after COVID. House prices rose, people were buying and selling, a lot of landlords decided to sell. And also there's been changes with the Welsh government changing the housing law, which has really also meant that a lot of private landlords are selling it because they just don't want the hassle of it. So we found that and also there was a change with the housing law because the local authorities were allowed to discharge their duty of dealing with homeless into private sector accommodation, which has not helped the private sector in some respects because it's dwindling and there's less of it and more people that are needing to go for it. There's been no kind of nothing there to kind of monitor what rents people can charge landlords. So you've got extreme extortionate rents and it's just blowing some people out of the water in terms of what they can afford. So yeah, it's really not a good situation at the moment. That said, you know, we do have some landlords who have stuck it out, who are willing to kind of keep rents realistic, and we really rely on them, you know, and so we're trying to sort of help them as much as possible. But it's a real issue across Wales at the moment. And like I say, I mean, it might be the UK wide, but I can only speak for Wales. And I know I've sort of been in talks with the Welsh government along with other providers just to kind of work out what can be done, really, because they're looking at changing the law on homelessness as well. And so, yeah, it's not a, I mean, I think this is the worst that I've known it, and I've been in the field for 24 years, so it's not great at all. And I think then what we have found is that churches have really come to the fore in terms of provision, because I don't know about other areas of the world, but the economic situation is not great. A lot of people are struggling with day-to-day costs, and so there are a lot of food banks that have sprung up, and people who really are, you know, struggling. So I think it's about us showing compassion as much as anything. And what we found with my team is we don't necessarily have all the answers, but we do give a listening ear and have time to actually listen to what people are saying, and just that empathy, and doesn't necessarily solve their problem, but at least they feel heard. Because I think it's so easy to kind of phone a phone line and get stuck in a queue and be phoning this and press this number to get to this, and you never get through to an actual human being. And I think with social media and the kind of growth of technology has almost lost that art of connection and conversation, you know, that people need, really. We really need that. We're created to be social, aren't we? We're created to connect. So yeah, I don't know whether that answers it, but that's definitely
because I think, you know, it's a growing problem everywhere, you know, here in the United States. I know there's especially certain areas like bigger cities and stuff where it's a big problem. So
yeah.
I was just curious how you guys were solving it. So
yeah, we're not. They're trying. There's a lot of, I mean, there's some really great, you know, public sector and private sector organizations. We work really closely with local authorities across North Wales. People are really trying to put their heads together and work out a plan, really, for how to do it. So yeah, but yeah, we there's only so much accommodation that's available, isn't there? So.
That's true. Yeah. So let me ask you this about kind of being international. We'll have a couple questions on that. First of all, the first question is, when you were growing up, did you realize that your parents were doing something very dangerous? Were you aware that,
you know? No. I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's weird, everyone's idea of normal, isn't it? Because you don't actually necessarily know that your parents, when I say they're not normal, I mean, I don't mean that they're weird, but you don't really, it's what your idea of normal is, isn't it? And so we were based in Vienna. And then there was a whole team. My parents worked for Operation Mobilization, which was OM. And there was a whole team. So my dad headed up the team for a time, and they would get vehicles like Ford Transit vans and put in secret compartments around the vans and load them with literature and then drive them into different countries. And I mean, we didn't know at the time, but, you know, the people on the team were given code names. So we only knew them by their code names, not their real names. And likewise, the people that they were meeting up with in town as well would, in the different villages, and that would have code names. No one knew anyone's name because there was so much persecution at the time with the communist governments that it was dangerous. Yeah, but we didn't know. I mean, I just remember I remember going into East Germany and before the wall came down and staying in a temporary, you know, like in a guest house somewhere, and my dad making us all be quiet while he searched the room for bugs and as in bugs of, you know, the telephone and stuff, because, and also just not putting people in danger, you know, people that we were meeting up with. If we were speaking English and really drawing attention to ourselves, then people would inform on other neighbors. You know, the secret police were everywhere and they were informing on each other. It was a you know, it was quite a grim time, a dangerous time. And so it's quite a change now to, I've not been back recently, but I remember, you know, just hearing about teens actually living in the countries that we used to smuggle Bibles into is amazing, you know. Yeah, it's changed a lot, but we didn't realize it was dangerous at the time. My dad's actually currently writing a book about it, so it should be good. He's going to be coming out with some sort of book later on in the year. So yeah,
have to get him on here once he's got his book all done.
Yeah.
So yeah, and the other thing I was thinking about, the second question was about just going into different cultures. So my first husband was from Japan, and I remember going to Japan for the first time, and you know, most of the people there have dark hair and brown eyes. And so I remember even being in the train station, and you know, everywhere I went since I was blonde and blue eyed, people were saying something, kids wanted to touch my hair. You know, and at the time I wore very long, kind of red, pink colored nail polish and long nails. And I guess it wasn't that popular over there because I wanted to get my nail fixed one day and there was no one who did nails. And so they would see that and they want to see my nails. So you were going into these areas. I mean, like, I'm looking at you, you're very light complected, you know, going and living in India or different places. What was your experience? Were people like, oh, you know?
Well, I remember when I was in India, so I was eight then, and I remember they used to come and pinch your cheeks really hard. But it was like this thing. But actually, funnily enough, it was when I was older. So I went to Mexico after, I was in Mexico City after my degree, and I was working in Mexican Indian kids, and they used to make me laugh because I speak Spanish, so you know it would be in Spanish, and they could. And they would just ask me things like, because I have a lot of freckles, they would say, ¿Por qué tienes tantas manchas? Why have you got so many stains on your skin? Or one of them thought that it was coffee stains. Like, no, these are freckles. And I remember going, like I lived near the pyramids in Mexico City, and I went up to Teotihuacan one day, and I just decided to go up to one of the pyramids. And I got to the top, and there was obviously a school trip that was there. And I have my little one just asking me a question. So okay. So And I got up to the top, and there was a school trip that was there, and they were obviously supposed to be, you know, taking in this historic moment of being on top of this, you know, pyramid. And they came over to me and were asking for my autograph. And I was like, I'm not even famous. Like, why do you want my autograph? But they were more interested in me because I was blonde and pale. And I guess they've not ever seen anything like that. So yeah, so I guess, and also it was very natural, you know, by the time you were 15, 16, in with the particular people that I was working with, you would normally be married. So they kept saying, where's your husband? That's why I haven't got one. So yeah, so it certainly has given me some good moments. But I guess also just understanding that you don't know just by being white, especially I think in Mexico, I you don't realize how much you can be hitting issues that have gone on for generations in terms of where atrocities have been carried out or where there's been a real deep root of unforgiveness against a nation, you know, and how much of a threat white can present because of history, you know, country history. And that was certainly something that I discovered when I was in Mexico. So yeah, we really need to forgive, but also understand how much it can be layers and layers and layers in a nation, can't it, of unforgiveness because of hurt. But that can be the same just in a person as well, I suppose. And so I think certainly through my own life I've found you know, I've had times, things that I've had to deal with where I've really had to bring it to God to make sure that I don't grow a bitter root and go down that vein of always believing that about somebody or something, you know, making sure that I deal with stuff and keep a short account. Yeah.
And, you know, you said if you were to go into a new culture and have to learn everything, you kind of, that was wonderful and fun for you to figure that out. And, but if people are, let's say they want to get along with other people, sometimes it could be a different culture. Sometimes it can be, we just need to get along with each other because we are different. We come from different families, different cultures. What is your best advice on actually having great communication with other people who are different than you, or learning and being accepting?
You know, I think you have to keep a sense of humor, but also it's about valuing people from different cultures, isn't it? And also understanding that people are different and celebrating the differences, but valuing what they bring to the table, really. And I think if, you know, from my point of view, because, you know, I believe that each person that I deal with is made in the image of God. And so the way that I would treat them is, you know, how I would want to be treated. Sorry, I have a little curly headed kid here. this is Iona. Say hi.
Hi, Iona.
She's just three. So,
okay. She's going to join us today.
Yeah. And so I think it's really important to just view people in the way that we would want to be viewed, isn't it? And whoever they are, whatever their nationality or background, treat them as you would want to be treated. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So let's talk about this with kids. So you got married and all of a sudden you had four sons. Did you say four sons?
Yeah.
All of a sudden you were instant mom from not being a parent. Yeah. Instant mom. How did that go for you?
It was, well, I guess I'd always got on with kids and I taught kids and stuff, but it's totally different to being a stepmom. Totally different. And actually, so three of them weren't living with us and one of them would come on weekends. So none of them were actually living with us full time, which I think that would have been a whole different kettle of fish if they'd have been in the house as well. But I remember, you know, before I got together with my husband and we were talking about it and he was saying, yeah, I have a lot of baggage. And I said, yeah, but everyone's got a lot of baggage. And he said, yeah, but not everyone's baggage comes to stay for the school holidays. So I was like, yeah. And so I think the important thing was with the boys was to not try and be their mum, really. It's just to be me. And it's a different relationship. And I didn't really think, because, I mean, you get all the fairy stories of stepmothers who are all wicked stepmothers. And I hope I wasn't like that. I don't think I was like that. But they were all different ages. So it depends on the age as well as to how you interact, even, I mean, with your own kids as well, not just stepchildren. You know, the way that you interact with your kids changes over time. And also, to a certain extent, your relationship morphs into something else as well. You always have that parental responsibility, but it does change the older they get. They become friends as well, hopefully. So it was certainly interesting, and it had its moments, but I still found having our own was a totally different experience again.
I was gonna say, what was their reaction when you started having your own family together? Was that
they've been great. And we've really, it's been great in terms of them taking on board with all of our kids, they know that they're all related and they're brothers or sisters, you know, so it's been great. And because of that age difference as well, and it takes on a different, you know, our oldest is in his early 30s now. So, and our youngest is three. So it's a different, it's nice to see. And it brings out especially with the boys, it brings out a kind of different thing from them, a real care from them in terms of how they relate to the other kids. So it's been nice. And yeah, it's been good. We've got a good group of kids. So,
tell me about your book, Moments in Mummydom.
Yes, I actually, just as on cue, my daughter's just picked it up. So I don't know whether that's it. So Moments in Mummydom came about partly from my blog. I started to write stuff down and people were saying I should write a book. So I decided to start a blog then. But really in my head, I was starting a blog with the aim of then writing a book at some point. That's why I kind of did it. So I just started to write stuff down, and I always had this kind of idea of wanting to write a book, but I wasn't really sure how to do it because it didn't really fit. There wasn't a real story in the same way as a normal story where there's a start, a beginning and an end. You know, parenting is an endless journey, isn't it? So, you know, so I was stuck really. And it's funny because actually, not last year, but the year before, just leading up to my birthday, I went to a cafe in a nearby town called Bangor. Sorry, my daughter's pointing a pencil in the picture. They have a cafe that's a miracle cafe. So they do amazing food. It's run by Christians. And also on the menu, you can choose off the spiritual menu. And you can choose different things. You can ask for a word of knowledge. You can ask for healing, for prayer for healing, different things. So I went with my kids. We did a big walk and then we went there for some food. And I asked for something off the spiritual menu and I asked for a word of knowledge. And actually one of the ladies that was serving, she was just a younger girl. And she said, oh, when I was driving in today, I had a picture of a traffic light. And she said, and I really actually now think that was for you. She said, there was a traffic light and it's been on amber and now it's on green and God is saying, go for it. And it's funny because I had felt like there was something that I was needing to do, but I wasn't sure what it was. And I'd been asking God, and I came away from there going, okay, Lord, I know that it's on green. I know you're telling me to do something, but I don't know what it is. And I felt like he just said, Jess, you know, you just need to keep your roots in me. Keep following what I'm doing and I'll reveal it to you. And anyway, so roll on. So January last year, a friend of mine had done a course and she then had posted on her Facebook that her book was published and I had commented and said, wow, that's amazing. Well done. This is a friend that I'd met with years ago and we talked about writing books and these books that we were going to write, and she'd actually done it. And when I posted, the guy that she'd done this course with responded. His name's Matt Bird. He responded and he said, oh, you should get in touch, because I had said, I really need to do this. And he said, oh, you should get in touch. So I checked him out on social media, you know, and realized that he was friends with different author friends of mine. And so I contacted him. He gave me his number. I contacted him, told him about my book idea, and he said, look, I ran this course, it's called Write My Book, and there's actually a course starting in a few weeks if you want to do it. And I was like, I don't know whether, because you know it's a time commitment, but you know what, I thought, I'm just going to strike while the iron's hot and I'm going to do it. So I signed up for this course and it was great. I was with a cohort of other people that were writing books. The connection that we had a weekly Zoom call to begin with, and then it went on into as the course progresses and you're actually writing, then it's lesser Zoom calls and more checking in and word counts and stuff. But there's regular, you know, there's like a monthly call to keep a handle on things, and that is what I needed, because it really gave me the structure that I needed and the accountability that I needed to kind of get it down. And also realize it's funny with my art, I kind of understand, you know, no one's going to paint like me because I paint different to everyone else because I'm me, you know. But you can be quite critical with your writing. And I had started to see other people that were doing a lot of parenting, you know, funny mummy books and this. And I was thinking, oh, it's not going to be like that. And I just felt like God was saying, do you know what? You don't need to worry. It's just you. And comparison can be the thief of creativity, can't it?
Yes.
Because we can so easily compare. And I think especially in this day and age with social media, it's so easy to compare and not realize the weight of comparison that can almost be on us by looking at social media and looking at these apparently perfect airbrushed families and lives, mm-hmm. and not, you know, oh, I don't meet that standard at all. You know, my house is not pristine. Flip, you want to see it. It's, yeah, it's like all these people have got these like white houses and, you know, nothing out of place. And I'm like, that is not my house.
No. That was nine children.
It's, you know, sparking clutter here, clutter there. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would aim for that, but that's not my house. So it's, yeah. And I think I was doing that with my writing, really. I was kind of comparing and it was holding me back from even starting. And I think, you know, comparing can, you can be too scared to start because you don't want to fail or whatever. So it was really good to do this course with other people that were writing who really encouraged, who've actually become lifelong friends now, and who really encouraged as we were writing to realize everyone's different. Everyone's different. Everyone's story is different. Everything is different, you know? And so I did it. I wrote a book within 100 days. Actually, I had actually written stuff all along the way, and I just brought it together. And then through the editing process, sorry, she likes to be on the camera. the editing process.
She's making the views go up by being on camera. Who doesn't like cuteness?
but. So, and then, so then we ended up, we would send it to different friends to, you know, who we trusted to give us some kind of feedback. And I got feedback and blow me, it's done. And I did a book and it was like a surprise, not just to me, but don't stick your tongue out. but to everybody, it was more of a surprise to me than anyone else, I think, in terms of having written this book. So my book is that, it is what it says on the tin. It's Moments in Mummydom. And it's basically the stories, some of it, it's fictional, but based heavily on fact. And it's a year in the life of a mum as she looks back over the year that's just happened. It's funny in parts. But it's supposed to just be real, and it's real in parts. So it's not all funny. There's some moments of, you know, sadness as well and different things that have happened, I guess, to me. You know, it's been, yeah, so it is that, really. And I think the feedback that I've had so far is that people just are appreciating the realness of it. And the funniness of it, but the realness of it. And so it's Moments in Mummydom. It's available on Amazon globally and Kindle globally. And please review it. If you buy it, please review it. But it's a short read. I've designed it so that it's easy to just pick up and put down at different points, especially if you've got a busy household and, you know, you don't necessarily get grand swathes of time to read. So, but really what I wanted to do through it is just touch people with knowing they're not on their own, really. I was asked by Matt, what were my goals with the book? And I said, one of my goals is, my first goal is to make people laugh. Mm-hmm. My second goal is that people will know that they're not on their own. And my third goal is to put God whispers into the book that touch people's hearts. And so I have put God whispers in there because I think personally, I wouldn't be able to do this without having my day-to-day walk with God, taking me through it, and just getting my wisdom from him. I say just, I mean, getting my wisdom from him, you know, just come on, please. And yeah, so that's what I've done. I guess what I wanted is to try and get a book that's attractive to the mainstream. So not overtly Christian, but just to make people think a little bit about what it is. And it's funny, when I was writing the book, that's when God told me, this is it, this is it, this is the green, this was the green on you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, you know, and it really made me realize sometimes we can look for, you know, the great big thing, like our big aim of life, of what we should be doing. And actually, sometimes we just need to look at what is in our hand, trust what we do, you know, trust who we are, trust the gifting that we've got. And provided that our roots are in the right place, God has made us unique and given us all giftings that are different. And it's really important to just follow the leanings. God isn't always going to ask us to do something we don't want to do. You know, he actually delights in blessing us. He delights in bringing out what he's put in us. And so it's just knowing, it's realizing that, you know, he is a good God, and he loves us, and he wants, he's put creativity in all of us that he wants to bring out. And it's just, he delights in that. He delights in whatever our creativity is. It might be spreadsheets, you know, or yeah. So I guess it's just to encourage, you know, because some people can get held up, you know, you think, oh, I'm not doing this grand thing. You know, I haven't got this grand call on my life, or, you know, and actually the call on your life can be the day to day, can't it? And it can be, you know, for me, it can be connecting with the mums that I go, or the dads that I'm talk to when I'm picking up the kids from school, or, you know, when I'm sitting watching swimming in a very, very hot swimming pool, it's who am I chatting to and what am I bringing? It's the day to day. It doesn't always have to be a big grand plan. You know, it can be, and often God can just unveil it as we're going along. Very rarely does it happen on a plate. You know, sometimes we fall into it just while we're doing it. So yeah.
And I like what you said, that, you know, what do we bring day to day? So if all we ask ourselves is, what am I bringing today? What am I bringing to this situation? What am I bringing? Like you said, sitting at the pool next to another parent, how am I encouraging them? Or, you know, maybe they were feeling the way I was feeling before, and I can encourage them or help them or let them know they're not the only one, like in your book.
Yeah, and it's about not being self-conscious, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I'll pretty much talk to anyone, you know. So if some people might find it weird, like I went for a dog walk the other day, and there was this old couple in front of me. This lady had the most amazing coat on, and I just thought, I'm going to tell her. And I said, good morning, happy new year, you've got an amazing coat. but it can be, we're very, yeah, it's really important to just be encouraging to people, isn't it? There's so much criticism out there. It's really important to be positive and to be encouraging. And don't be false, but actually just be encouraging and be natural with people and say the good things, because not everyone has good things said to them. You know, it's important that we are good and positive in the way that we speak to people. Yeah.
Yeah, we all need to hear those things. So, but now I have a personal question for you. What gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now, at this point?
Where the way that I feel happy for me is to be connecting with God. And so if I don't have that time with him on a daily basis, if I haven't grounded myself in that, then I'm not a very good person to be around. I think it's important for me to just feel like I'm listening carefully to what he's telling me to do, and to then go ahead and do it. really. And that's when I'm most happy. And I think it's so easy to get pulled up, pulled into the next best thing materially. And actually, that's very fleeting. And it's about us, it's about me realizing what matters in life. Diana, don't do that, please. Yeah, so that is what makes me happy, is when I feel like I'm listening to God, that I'm acting on what he's telling me to do, whether that's, I don't mean necessarily in a spiritual sense, you know, sometimes in a spiritual sense, but just in my day to day and the way that I do life. That's what makes me happy, is just that. And also being in the hills, being with nice scenery. We live in a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. And so it makes me happy. I go for a run pretty much every morning and just, yeah, that's just great. Taking in the hills and the sea and the mountains and feeling connected, yeah. I suppose, to what's out there, just having that peace time. And I think that's it. Is there's a lot of bluster and busyness in life, isn't there? And it's really important to take that time to just have soul time, really, for us, whatever that might be, that headspace. So yeah, that for me is mountains, hills, mm-hmm. running, sea, mm-hmm. and yeah, and fun with my family.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and for sharing your stories and your insights and your book.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciated it. And my little helper has been alongside.
Yes,
it didn't quite work. I said, make sure that you keep her amused. And the older ones are like, yeah, okay, half an hour's enough. And then
that was it. Yeah. So I have one last question before we finish. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Oh, wow. My best advice. Don't be scared to be you, really. Provided that you isn't horrendous. You know, be but I guess it's about being, keeping accountable, isn't it? And be pliable, be changed, you know, be willing to be changed and corrected, but don't be scared to be you. Because yeah, it's easy to be scared to actually be real, and it's about being real. And yeah, if we have people around us that love us, they'll soon knock off any corners that need knocking off. So but don't be scared to go with what's in your heart and be you, as long as it's legal. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jess.
Oh, you're welcome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Yeah.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, take care. Bye.